For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Ishan,
take it away.
Please offer your dharma and say anything you'd like us to know about yourself.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. You're going to hear a lot of what I don't want you to know about myself today. But, you know, bear with me. There's some teaching here. I first want to just welcome everyone in person and online, and especially a few of you who are new. And to especially apologize to the newcomers who have never met me before or heard one of my talks. I think it's really very reasonable to go to a Zen center and think that the person who is giving the talk is going to be a good example of what they're teaching. And if you are instead feeling partway through this talk like this person has the same problems I have, maybe even worse, try to bear with me. There will be some teaching later on in the end. But I was really struggling with I've been struggling for some time with what to talk about for this talk. And I somehow really through many, many years of practice was delivered an inspiration. You know, I think that, and this is part of maybe one of the gifts of practice, is that when we practice for a long time in a place with other people, we hear lots of teachings and lots of stories and things that we can remember and use in our life when we have, you know, kind of fallen into the weeds. And this talk is going to be along those lines, because what I've really been aware of for a while is that I've been sort of on edge and unhappy, and I started noticing over the summer but more recently, really like dedicated some time to noticing, you know, kind of my own self-talk and you know, what's going on in my head. And what I've noticed is that there is pretty much a constant string of just fault finding and petty grievances and trying to hold on to things or push things away, you know, all that greed. I've just a continuous stream of greed, hate, and delusion. And on really almost any topic at all, but there's some topics that come up all the time, and a lot of them involve situations where I'm going to improve myself. It focuses around, you know, fitness and losing weight and maybe being more productive in general. I, you know, have this idea of all these things I'm going to do. I should be fixing up my house, and we have an apartment that we're trying to fix up and rent out, and I should be working on that, and I should be, you know, answering my emails promptly or even reading them, or, you know, I should be more responsive. You know, it just goes on and on. And it's all about fixing and managing and controlling, and I'm just not doing it right. And then, you know, I'm not working out enough. I'm not eating right enough. Despite trying all of these things, I am never, ever satisfied with how I'm doing it. My meditation is too distracted, and I'm not doing it enough, and I'm not doing it, you know, this way and that way. And that's one theme. So what I'm doing is never enough. The other main theme is that the world is in my way. So nobody else is doing the right thing either. Basically, you know, there's horrible, horrible drivers out there, and I need to not let them do anything to me, like, you know, cut me off or get further. If there's two lanes of traffic, they better not get further in their lane than I am in my lane. You know, it just goes on and on. It gets to, you know, seeing people as obstacles. People are just, people cease to be people. They're just obstacles in the way of me getting something. And really mostly what I focus on is getting through the next thing so that I can rest, whether that's getting, you know, home from work or getting through some new project or getting through the week, getting through the month. I'll rest and I'll be happy later on. And if it's not that, it's holding on to the right now. Like I was sitting in Zazen thinking, this is so lovely. But then later on, I'm going to have to go do something. And, you know, you can't hold on to that either. And this has been not fully outside of my awareness. This is I've been kind of aware of these behaviors for some time, but I have been, you know, kind of rationalizing and justifying my behavior that, you know, as necessary or to in order to live or as temporary. Like I'll work on this eventually, but first I really got to get like ahead of this guy in traffic. And a couple of things have changed that, very recently. One is, a quote that I recently read that was floating around on the internet that I'll read you part of. And this person says, "We convince ourselves that life will be better after we get married, have a baby, then another. Then we're frustrated that the kids aren't old enough and we'll be more content when they are. After that, we're frustrated that we have teenagers to deal with. We will certainly be happy when they are out of that stage. We tell ourselves that our life will be complete when our partner gets his or her act together, when we get a nicer car, are able to go on a nice holiday, when we retire. The truth is, there's no better time to be happy than right now. If not now, when? Your life will always be filled with challenges." And this appears to be true. "It's best to admit this to yourself and decide to be happy anyway." A quote comes from Alfred D. Souza. He said, "For a long time, it had seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, or a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. At last, it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life." So I read that quote and I thought, oh, that is so what I am experiencing right now and have been experiencing and haven't always been experiencing. This is definitely a part of a long-standing habit pattern in my life. I will tell you that when my parents were driving me to college and we were taking turns driving, someone asked if we could stop at the next rest stop so that they could go to the bathroom. And I actually said no, because then I'm going to have to pass all these people all over again. So it's a very strong tendency that I have, but there have been times in my practice life where, that's been a little bit more malleable, and I'm just noticing that I'm sinking into that solidified habit right now. The other thing that happened to me, which happened just yesterday, is that I spent time with an old friend who I haven't seen for a while, and we got together with the purpose of running the 5K, the Run Mag Mile 5K. Together, which we used to run together, and you know, when we were younger, and we didn't have to walk half of the time, but now we have to walk for half of it. And I was noticing how I'm focused on, we're not running fast enough, and when we're walking, we're not walking fast enough, and I've got a timer so that we can, like, you know, stay on track here. And, you know, and then that, and I'm not trying hard enough, and just the whole panoply of thoughts. And I'm noticing that my friend is just, she's just happy. She's like, okay, you tell me when we run and you tell me when we walk, and I'm good with that. And she's like, this is great. We're out here. I can't believe we're doing this again. And just the whole stream of like, how much she's enjoying this and how grateful she is that we're able to do this again. And I'm like, wow, I'm really learning a lesson here from a joyful person. And my friend has had, she's had some ups and downs as well. But you know, that we've been talking about recently, and I just sort of said, you know, wow, you're so joyful. And she said kind of what was in this quote. She said, you know, I decided to be happy. I just decided. And I guess she's been practicing it because it's coming more naturally to her than it did to me. Because I decided to really watch this for the rest of the run and the time that we were together. And I really noticed every single time I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm not doing enough, or you know, this isn't going the way I wanted it to, or this, maybe if I tried a little harder, we could get it to happen this way. And realized that there's something here that I have to change. And it's not that easy, because it's the whole stream of consciousness. You know, I think I'm, you know, working out of a shame-based economy here that just, you know, perpetuates more shoulds when I try to think about stopping it. You know, it's even the thought of like, I gotta stop is like, oh yeah, well you better stop right now, and you better, and if you slip, then you've really blown it. You know, it's like, wow, it's like, okay, this is really vast. So I decided that you know, maybe some just acknowledgement and repentance were in order, and I was trying to think about the precepts and how I might focus on the precepts or our paramitas, which are our, you know, transcendent practices that help us awaken. But then I remembered something that was maybe even more immediate to this process, and that is the five remembrances. And so I see a couple of people nodding their heads. So many people know what the five remembrances are, and I'll describe them anyway. These are from the Upajatana Sutra, which is an early teaching of Buddha on life's fragility and our true place in the world and our true inheritance. And the five remembrances are as follows. First one is, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. The second one is, I am of the nature to grow ill. I cannot escape sickness. The third is, I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. These first three insights are the insights that led Buddha to renounce his royal household status and to become an ascetic. And even those three didn't prevent, you know, old age sickness. Even becoming an ascetic didn't prevent old age sickness and death, which is what Buddha discovered. But the five remembrances go on. And the fourth remembrance is, I will be separated from everything and everyone I hold dear. So when that happens, it is what it is. And the fifth remembrance is, my only true possession is my actions. And phrased maybe slightly differently in some translations, I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. So we are, you know, what we make, we are what we do, you know, and the fruits of our, we will live out the fruits of our actions, but we don't necessarily have control over what the fruits of our actions are. We can act in ways that we know are beneficial. We can't guarantee that there will always be a beneficial result. We can't guarantee that we have foreseen all of the possibilities and that this one action is going to be beneficial, because that's not how life works, and we do not have that kind of omniscience. So it's a wonderful reminder that we are human, that we are fragile, that we are impermanent, we are imperfect, life is impermanent. And I thought about these five remembrances, and I recognized that, you know, when you look at my behavior from this perspective, you know, my actions and my fault finding and my petty grievances can really be more clearly seen as ways to push away old age, sickness, and death. That I have this idea that if I were trying harder or doing better, that I wouldn't be aging, you know, and I wouldn't fall prey to sickness. That I would be able to hold on to the good things that I want and avoid the things that I don't want. And I can really come to see, practicing in this way, it helps me to see that these things happening are not the result of my not trying hard enough. They're not my responsibility. The world spinning on its axis is not my fault. even though I cannot escape the consequences of my actions, we don't have to. It's possible to think about this as in a different way. That this is the nature of the world. The world is impermanent. The world is imperfect. And if we add to these five remembrances the Four Noble Truths, you know, which is that all things are dukkha, whether that means suffering or impermanent or imperfect, and that suffering is born from our grasping and craving. There's an end. It's possible to end suffering. There's a cessation to suffering. And this end is through the Noble Eightfold Path, or living according to Buddhist teachings. I can remember that I'm not in control here. This is, you know, our lives are imperfect and impermanent, and all of my efforts to get my ducks in a row are effort, you know, but it's a limited, very limited usefulness. The fifth remembrance in particular, you know, my actions are my only true possession, or I can't escape the consequences of my actions. Our actions are actually creating our world. What we do greatly influences what we think and what we believe and what we even think is happening. And what we think is happening is not all of what's happening. You know, the person cutting me off in traffic maybe has no idea. Like, I think they're doing this to me on purpose. They may have no idea. They're trying to get somewhere. They're focused on their life. And let go of my self-centeredness. You know, our actions are creating our world. We still need to take care of our body. We need to exercise. We need to eat right. We need sleep. But it's still going to decay. And it's going to decay the way that it does, that we don't have control over this. We will not be able to escape old age, sickness, and death, even if we can maybe, you know, fend them off for a little while. We do the best we can, and we accept that life is what it is. So living in this way, we can, you know, reflect on and decide what is important in our life. You know, is it family? Is it a partner? Is it work? Is it this fitness? Is it fame? You know, and we can take actions to benefit or to try to cultivate those qualities or situations in our life, and what we cultivate in our life will bear some kind of fruit. But just as in gardening, we don't have total control over what that is. We really only have control over what our actions are, and we can choose, ideally with a little bit more spacious of a mindset than I have been enacting in my life lately. So you know, you can contemplate what is most important to you in life and let it serve as a touchstone for how you live your life. But hold it lightly, you know, and be prepared to let it go as it will, because accepting the impermanence and imperfection in our life can really bring about the ending of suffering as a result of the impermanence and perfection. So that's the talk I needed to hear today. Whether or not that's the talk that you personally needed to hear today or not, I hope that you were able to hear something of yourself in it and get something of benefit from it. I think I'll read the five remembrances again, just as a touchstone for wrapping up this talk, and maybe we can have some conversation about this. So the five remembrances are: I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. I am of the nature to grow ill. I cannot escape sickness. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. I will be separated from everything and everyone I hold dear. And my only true possession is my actions. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. So I plan on writing these on an index card and posting, maybe more than one index card, and posting them around my environment as a reminder to myself when I start to get grabby. So thank you for listening. And Eve, are you volunteering? Anyone who would like to speak, please do it. For those online, please raise your hand, and Jerry, I think, or I will call on you if you have anything you'd like to share. But I think Eve had your hands in Gasho.
Anyway, thank you very much for the talk. I think it was a talk I needed to hear. So maybe there are others too, but I appreciate you sharing. But anyway, I wanted, because I don't know that much about the five remembrances, and could you say a little more about, like, you know, when they were uttered or how they've come down to us, or because it's something I think I would like to share with others. I want to know a little more about it.
How would that help you?
Because, well, like I said, because I think it's something that I would like to share with others.
Okay, well,
I want to know a little more.
I don't know too much. These are from the, can't say
very
it,
very hard to pronounce,
Upajatana Sutta, which is part of the early teachings of Buddha. And I don't know who it was written for, or it came down to us through, you know, oral tradition in the beginning, and then at some point someone started writing these things down. But it's part of the Theravadin teachings. So it is a little bit focused on maybe more individual liberation than collective liberation, like the Mahayana. But individual liberation is what I'm working on these days. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if that answered all of your questions, but that's what I can share. Dylan.
Yeah, I was smiling through almost this whole talk because this is pretty much exactly the discussion I was having in my Dokusan that happened like 2 days ago about this, like, the fascination or the desire to control your actions or control what you're doing. And this just decision to be, well, in my case, it was an encouragement to just let myself be silly, and you know, which is an aspect of myself that I kind of sometimes protect more, but it's connected because the desire to have control over what I'm doing, or control over actions or the scenario or the context, I think has a layer of lack of trust of yourself in it, which is another way of saying, like, lack of love for yourself, I think, too. Like, trust and love, I think, are very, they're cousins or siblings. I don't think that means the same thing as, like, not being thoughtful about what you do or not being careful, but having there be a distinction between wanting to control, wanting to have a sense of control over your actions and over the environment versus just letting yourself be silly, be yourself, be joyful, just decide to be happy and trusting that's going to be okay. That whatever the fruits of those actions are, you can't control what those fruits are going to be, but that you can trust yourself to be joyful. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good reminder. And also I think I can be kind of squelched very quickly by someone who's not joyful.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a reminder that, you know, perhaps, that person who's, you know, scowling at you also could use a little joy.
Yeah.
You know, that my, and ways in which, you know, this is maybe more of a bodhisattva practice, we can turn things around for other people by being joyful, the way
sure.
that my running buddy turned things around for me yesterday, you know, and really without scolding or fault finding or any of the shame-based economy helped me see, like, wow, I don't have to be this way.
Absolutely.
I don't have to be like this. You know, that's part of how we change, help others change and find some freedom.
You know, I think too, it comes down to compassion. I don't think it's, you know, I don't know if I ever decide to be happy or joyful, because that sounds to me like I'm going to control the situation again. Okay, I'm going to decide this, and I get to decide this, and it's something under my control whether I'm happy or not. I don't think happiness is in our control. I think that's why we sit. I think when we sit, it opens up our heart, and once we have more compassion, happiness just comes along with compassion. They're just walking down the street together. That's, you know, and it's a little more, it takes a little, you have to be a little more patient, because it's quicker to decide than it is to wait for your compassion to grow. But if you wait for your compassion to grow, you get a better result. You get a better, it's bigger.
I wonder if there's maybe a middle way there, though, between waiting and forcing, which would be like cultivating.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can take actions with the thought that perhaps this will help to cultivate that compassion.
Yeah, but I think you need to be sitting is. You need to be sitting.
So that's a good action.
Yeah, sitting is good.
There's an action.
But like this morning, for example, like I just decided to smile for no particular reason, just to see what would happen for the rest of the day, right? And just to be like, why not, you know? And where it's worked out so far.
Well, I just, you know, wanted to frame this a little bit and some things you've implied, but we have these energies, or that we cultivate, called paramitas, you know, which are patience, generosity, the precepts, you know, Buddha's precepts of basically living in a way that benefits the world and being honest with ourselves when ligation and these things come up. Just the energy of effort or diligence. Like these are, so it's not like, oh great, I'm just cheerful, you know.
Right.
And meditation, and also a kind of super knowing or a super wisdom where we like, oh, I get it. Do I want to be happy or and awake or create more suffering for myself and others? So I just want to frame it in that we have all these energies that support us too. It's not like we're just like these limp noodles, but there's an effort to being present and upright and open and compassionate. Ashen, one thing I wonder too is if you noticed any softening of like, you know, I should be this way and I better, and if I do this, then I'll get this, and then, you know, all that massive suffering. But there's a way to kind of understand of like, oh, our whole world is kind of a shame-based economy, this capitalism, productive, you know, you better do more faster, and, you know, we've all seen where this ends up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And so I think about that of like being like, of course I'm going to feel this, you know, and of course there's pain that might have, you know, thought, oh, I'm anxious about college and getting ahead, so I'm driving faster, you know, and understanding ourselves and the chain of twisted knots, and then, you know, kind of dropping those fetters. But there's also like, I'm going to be happy, but there's also like, oh, of course I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think your talk is so relatable because we all do this. So that's enough for me. But I just really appreciate it. I think it's such a beautiful presentation of how we all are conditioned in this world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to add to that with the precepts. I know that there are several people here who are working on taking the precepts, and several people in this room who have taken the precepts. And it's more than just, you know, intellectual learning about what they are, and it's really living them and seeing the ways in which we can try to practice the precepts in a very, you know, strict way, like no killing, you know, and yet at some point we realize that there's no way to perfectly practice the precepts, and that helps us to begin to soften our attitude. You know, there's lots of opportunities in our practice to see ways in which we are holding on too tight or holding on too loose. You know, that was another thing that I wanted to talk about, but I didn't want to get, you know, too far afield. But we help each other, you know, as a Sangha, we help each other to see that, like, oh, we could, somebody's smiling at me now, maybe I could just smile back. Or, you know, somebody's, you know, I'm noticing how I'm treating this person. It's not working, and they're helping me to maybe be a little kinder to myself. So I saw, Serena, I saw your hand, and Laura, and I didn't know if you, I saw you also.
Sort of.
Okay.
And Anu's, there's a tentative.
Oh, sure. And then we'll get
yeah. To. I just thought it was interesting because I heard this sort of, you know, the different perspectives on happiness are from Jerry, and you, I think it, I kind of understand it as it's not necessarily a choice to, like, make yourself be happy at any given moment, but it's a choice to accept happiness when it's there instead of just continue to engage in, like, thinking about other stuff. Or,
mm-hmm. I think that's really important, and to, not try to grab onto it when it isn't there. It's like we kind of just loosen our grasp a little bit. But thanks. Yeah, you're right. It's a lot about accepting all through. Serena, you also were going to say something.
I had a couple of thoughts. Thank you for your Dharma talk. And I noticed these things in myself also quite a bit. And part of me thinks that obviously this like instinctual brain is always looking for a problem to solve, you know, and always and it's a little bit of like, you know, as a human animal, like looking for danger and like having to like be stealthy in the world to like be, you know, safe or like to, you know, what like an animal would be in a forest, you know, keeping an eye out and like effectively staying alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that, and then I think about, was it five remembrances?
Five, yeah.
Five remembrances. And then the word remember, you know, to remember, like to remember, for me, like I need to remember to have gratitude for the things that are working. And that I know are working, even if they're not right here, but sometimes it's, instead of always looking to solve a problem, you know, to like, to be able to cut through that and remember that there's things that are working and that are like supportive and sometimes my problem with the problem is the problem. So like to get out of the hamster wheel. And then I heard something that was so helpful when I heard it in a yoga class. This one instructor used to open every class with this, yoga nidra. It was a little different than like hatha yoga, but she would open every class with, what would be here if nothing were wrong? And that would be like this question we'd all sit with at every class. And it's like, wow, that's so helpful. I have to remember to ask myself that when I'm like spinning through my list of like, you know, checking boxes and, you know, kind of feeling hectic. And so that thing of like remembering a quiet place that is supportive internally, to remember to go back to that place and remembering, remembering the inner resource, you know, instead of always being like, I am like, an instinctual animal going about my survival mode, you know, survival mm-hmm. mode always.
Yeah.
So that's what comes up for me, and I feel like it comes up for me is like a lot, and I see it more with meditation, so I'm grateful for that.
That's a really good reminder that this is part of our instinctual animal nature, you know, and that practice is about, learning how to work with that and thereby transcend some of the suffering that comes as a result. Because, we can't continually solve problems.
Yeah.
Some problems can never be solved.
Dennis online has something.
Okay.
Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you for your talk. I really appreciate how you framed it at a personal level. I think that's, for me personally, is that when I can see that other people struggle with these things, that it goes back to the compassion that was mentioned earlier of having compassion for myself as well as the other person. And it's that, you know, the phrase in the remembrance is I am of a nature to. That's the thing that I have to hold on to, that nobody gets above human.
Yeah.
And I keep reminding myself of that reality. And, you know, those phrases, those remembrances can be a bummer. It can sound like a very negative, but, you know, in terms of compassion, I think they take on a whole different, for myself, a whole different tone. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. I think Buddhism can get a bad rap sometimes as being, you know, kind of negative with like the whole everything is suffering and, you know, reminding us about our human frailties and death. But it is, as you're saying, you know, accepting that that we have them, that can really, when we stop fighting against them, it's such a relief. I lost what I was going to say, but it is a big relief to just accept, to accept that there are times that we're going to trip up, you know, instead of looking at every mistake and every, stumble as, you know, you're doing it wrong. I mean, it's kind of maybe just a different orientation towards life and accepting that, you know, as someone once told me, the world is really humming along at about a C+ average. So don't try to, you know, expect an A+ all the time. I think, you know, for myself, it was the reminder that I'm actually creating a lot of suffering here with my, you know, continuous optimizing of situations. Mike.
Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your dharma. I obviously relate a lot. This is a year that I've really taken on myself, which I think to change a lot of my own habits. And I find myself getting too much in one side of being so controlling about how I was doing things. And, And as I've kind of sat with that, I found myself softening a bit, which has felt very good to say, okay, well, I can still do these things, but I don't run every day. It's not the end of the world. And how grateful that I am actually running at all or doing something. To Dennis's point, one, thank you for bringing forth the remembrances. It's been a while since I've been reminded of them. But I think of them as very positive, actually, because I feel like, once you're confronted with this thing of like, well, okay, you're going to die, or you know, you're going to get old, then I don't feel as anxious in my anxiety about, you know, I must do everything now while I'm young. Okay, you can still do things whenever, and it kind of frees, it's very freeing. And I find that, like, oh, okay, well, now I can just focus on what matters.
Along with that, you just made me remember another aspect that I was maybe going to talk about, which is we can feel, people will tell you things like, you know, oh, appreciate your parents while you have them because one day you won't, or appreciate, you know, that you can do this while you're young because one day you won't be able to. And I'm coming up against some of those limitations now of like, you know, my parents are gone and I miss them. Does that mean that I didn't appreciate them enough while they were here? And you know, does that mean that I didn't appreciate, like I didn't work out hard enough while I still could? So there's no end to the shame-based economy, really. It's endless. And back to what Dylan, you were talking about. It's like trust yourself. Trust that you brought yourself to situations in the past with, you know, some version of the same part mind that you are bringing yourself to situations in now. And like someone else, you know, hasn't said today, but as you know, we've all heard, you know, we did the best we could with what we had and what we knew, and now that we maybe know something different, we can do something differently. Nathan, I see that you have your hand raised.
Hello, I made a comment in the chat. I'm not sure if anyone saw it or if I should just read it.
Please read it.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of people here who can't read the chat.
Okay. At the beginning of the talk, you quoted a quote from that you attributed to Alfred Sousa. And I had the opportunity to research this quote a few months ago or maybe a year ago. And it's actually widely misattributed to Alfred Sousa, but it's really from the Chicago writer Bette Howland.
Really?
From her memoir W3, which was published in 1974, and it's her account of her stay in the University of Chicago Hospital's psychiatric ward.
Wow! Oh.
So I thought I should correct that since you're in Chicago and it's a Chicago writer, so might as well give the accurate attribution here.
Thank you. So I guess we don't know how it got misattributed to someone else, but
I figured that out. It appears in tons of self-help books, and it's the misattribution started sometime in the early 90s.
Oh, interesting. Well, I appreciate the correction. I still really love the quote. That our obstacles really are our life. Or wasn't it John Lennon who said, life is what happens while we're making other plans? Similar sentiment. Were you going to share anything else, Nathan? Oh, okay. Thank you. I see that it is 11:10, and I don't know how late we go. Okay. I think it might be time. But thank you all for accepting my humanity today and sharing your own humanity and really helping us all to soften a little bit and to just, you know, recognize that we're human and we practice with what we have. So thank you very much. Yes, but I have to move some stuff.
Okay. Oh, okay. So I think we will do the four Bodhisattva vows, which are on page, I don't know, maybe 34, 35, 36 of the chant book, or will be posted online.
36.
And then after that, we'll have some announcements.
Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. How to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are we vow to realize it.